Good morning.
Morning.
And hi. Okay, this morning I'm going to talk about bare awareness of emotion. In our practice period, we've been talking, we've had a practice period that's been going on for, I think, 6 weeks now, 7 weeks. And we've been talking about the emotion of anger in particular. But I just want to talk about emotions in general and the practice of bare awareness, which I have talked about before, off and on. Off and on. So in Zen, we talk a lot about intimacy. And we value intimacy. And what we mean by that is looking at all the aspects of our experience and really connecting with all the aspects of our experience so that we can see our life in a deeper way than we usually do. And this isn't this ability to experience intimacy isn't some kind of strange capacity. It comes from the practice of bare awareness. It's a simple capacity. It's a simple capacity. It's not esoteric. Nothing esoteric to it. So bare awareness, in its simplicity, is liberating. It's freeing. And it's very refreshing. Continually refreshing. The metaphor that's used in Zen, one of the metaphors which used and then critiqued, is the metaphor of dust on the window. Dust on the window. Dust on the clear window. Our judgments, our interpretations, our fears, our concerns, our predispositions, all of our past history, all of that dust that gloms on the clear window. So our freedom is the capacity just to pay attention to that stuff as it accumulates on the window, as it dissipates when we just give it our kind, bare awareness. So this isn't something that is going to happen in the future when you... This is only something that you can do right now. You can only do it right now. Only do it right now. Seeing the things that drive us. What drove you to get here this morning? Seeing the things that drive us. Seeing the things that we react to. And beginning to make wiser choices. That's all this practice is about. That's all it's about. So emotions offer a really rich tapestry for our lives. Really rich. Sometimes they're wonderful, sometimes they're awful, but they are what we are as human beings to experience and express emotion. So we're not... This isn't about getting rid of emotion at all. Not at all. It's about the freedom that allow us just to see the emotions and let them pass through. Let them pass through. Pass by the window. Passing by the window. Glomming on for a little while, but then passing by. Sooner or later, they all pass by. So, in meditation, we have an opportunity to have some deep trust in our emotional life. A deep trust in our emotional life. Even though the Zen teachers don't talk about it, the other Buddhist teachers do. And it comes up in your sitting. The emotions come up in your sitting. They come up. And you can push them away, but they'll come back. The more you push them away, the more you'll come back. Or you can hold on to them. The more you hold on to them, the more they'll stick to your nice clear window. And if we do a sitting practice regularly, if we have a regular sitting practice, we'll experience some more deep emotion, not just getting stuck to the superficial emotion, some more deep emotion that we didn't expect. We didn't expect. And this is all by just noticing. Shikan, just to, in Japanese, just to. Taza, sit. Nothing to it. Too simple for you. For me, too. When I was younger, I wanted something more. Something more. So, Buddha has a famous simile called the simile of the arrows. Now, there's also the simile of the poison arrow, but this is the simile of the arrow. It's plural. He asked, if a man is struck by an arrow, would that hurt the man? The assembly said, this is a smart assembly, yes, that would hurt. And then the Buddha said, say the person is struck by a second arrow. Is that even more painful? And the people said, he said, oh, good, wise disciples. Excellent, wise disciples. So the Buddha said, life sometimes brings you the first arrow. The second arrow is what you shoot at yourself. The second arrow. Hi, you guys. Second arrow is what you shoot at yourself. So the second arrow. That's our criticism, right? That's our attacking the emotion. That's our running away from the anger. That's our repressing the anger. That's our sublimating the anger. That's the second arrow. And lots of times we have second arrows, and we have third arrows, and we have fourth arrows. The point is to use our bare attention just to see the arrow as it hurts us, as it penetrates, just to see. So Tuesday, last Tuesday, remember? Election day? So I went to bed at something like 9:15, mildly optimistic. And I woke up at 6 a.m. I had to go to a breakfast meeting, and my wife was next to me in bed, elated. And she gave me a rundown. And I experienced initial elation, and then I remembered who I was having breakfast with. I was having breakfast with two Republicans, one of whom is a Tea Party guy. These are white males, right? These are we know that story, right? we know that Romney won the election for the white male. He won the white male election. So there I was. Well, I'm a white male too, right? There I was. I had to go meet those guys. My wife felt elated, and I felt dejected. That was my arrow, dejection, because I was going to have breakfast with them. And then I had a second arrow. I shouldn't be so attached. That was my second arrow. I shouldn't be so attached. After all, I've been practicing meditation for 40 years. Jeez. And then a third arrow. What kind of a teacher are you? What kind of a teacher are you? Fifth arrow. Right? Right? That's the human situation. Doesn't matter how long you've been practicing. Bear attention to it. When we have bare attention, even if it's to the 36th arrow, finally, at the 36th arrow, we pay bare attention. That's fine. 36th arrow is fine. Just see the 36th arrow. Don't judge yourself negatively for having 35 arrows. Don't judge yourself. Wake up to that 36th arrow, to how it feels. Breathe into it. Pay attention to it. Notice it. It doesn't matter if it's a 36th arrow or a 350th arrow. Here it is. You can wake up right now. Bare awareness is only for right now. Only for right now. sooner or later, we do. We wake up and we step back. Or we could say we step into intimacy, which isn't doesn't judge. So when I talk about emotion, I say the two components to it. Bare awareness of emotion means first we recognize. Instead of dismissing the emotion, this is too yucky an emotion. I'm supposed to be beyond this emotion. We recognize it. Oh, here it is. Sometimes it hits us over the head. Sometimes it just creeps in, sort of in spite of ourselves. It just sort of creeps in and absorbs our whole being. We just notice it. We're recognizing it. And that recognition is the beginning of freedom. And then, after recognition, we accept. There's an acceptance. We allow it to be there, just as it is. It's not good or bad, and it's freedom. Its freedom is our freedom. Its freedom is our freedom. And meditation practice is a safe place to have your full range of emotions, just to let them come in, just to let them pass through. When you meditate, it's even okay, as Gil Fronsdahl once said, to have murderous rage. You're just sitting here on the cushion, you know. You've got 30 minutes left in your sitting. No harm. Let the murderous rage come through. What a safe place. What a beautiful place to just let your murderous rage come through. Just come through. Just pass by the window. Just pass it by. So recognize and accept. Recognize and accept. And it takes a while. It takes a while, this meditation. And if I were a Vipassana teacher, I would say recognize and accept, but also name. We don't do naming in Zen, but in Vipassana they do naming. And sometimes, actually, spontaneous naming is cool. Just that we're not so much into the system, the structure of how you should be when you sit. You just plop your butt in the cushion and see what happens. Breathe and pay attention. Don't try to go through some system. Recognition, acceptance, naming. We don't do that, because then you get caught up in a new trip trying to accomplish the right meditation technique. Then you really get yourself mixed up, right? Or maybe you accomplish it all. Go home and tell your significant other, I got it. She says, oh, yeah, right. Anyway, but naming is good sometimes. It's a bit of encouragement to stay there. If I'm angry about something, I just say anger over to myself. It cuts off the story a little bit. It subdues the story. I'm just saying anger. I'm with the anger. And then all the story about all the things that she did to me and all the things that she might have done to me and that I can do back to her get sort of calmed down. Calm down that story. So the naming can be helpful, especially if you don't turn or make it a religion. Don't turn it into some sign of system where you're going to get something. Because there's nothing to get. This is bare awareness. This is your natural, clear window. And then, of course, in Vipassana also, they talk a lot about bodily sensations. Feel the anger, feel the sadness in your body. Where is it? That's cool, too. Just don't make a religion out of it. That's cool, too. Because if we can embody the emotion, the emotional life has an easier time to course through our bodies and pass through. Just pass through on its own. On its own, it passes through if we embody it. We don't mess with it, right? Maybe first I notice the tension in my neck. from whatever it is. And then I can see where it goes down into my chest. Maybe it's stuck there for a while. Maybe there's some heat in my chest. I just breathe into that. And let it course through. Let it course through. Sometimes, and the pattern of the emotion, we don't know what the pattern's going to be like. Sometimes a small emotion will turn into something huge. Sometimes a huge emotion will dissipate almost right away. Sometimes it'll stick around forever. Can we just sit with it? Can we just breathe into it? Just look at it? Just be with it? This takes some trust in your zazen. It takes some trust in your meditative capacity to do this very, very simple practice. So, back to Wednesday morning. So, my first arrow, there's my wife's arrow, elation. Oh, I want, and my first arrow, she's telling me about it, dejection. Can't cancel the breakfast. Can't cancel the breakfast. Can't be sick. Oh, I could be sick. But so, first arrow, dejection. Second arrow, I shouldn't be so attached. Third, what kind of a Zen teacher are you anyway? You da-da-da-da-da. Some profanity, right? But third arrow, acceptance. In that case on Wednesday morning, complete acceptance. I didn't name it. I haven't been trained in naming. I'm not a Vipassana person, although I do name sometimes, but I didn't name it. I didn't feel it in my body. I haven't had much training in that, although sometimes it's great. It happens just in the Zendo, just on your own. It's great. Recognize it, accept it by the third arrow. Wow. Let it go. Let it go. Went off to in good spirits, not elation, because I still had to meet with them, but in good spirits to have breakfast at the, you know, this is a Republican cafe, right? We got to have breakfast at Perkins. When do I go to Perkins? You know, there are the Romney cafes and the Obama cafes, no doubt about it. Well, we're going to the Romney cafes, right? Perkins. So I get there. My friends come there. My Tea Party friend. I'm there with one of my friends who's just a regular Republican. Then I've got my rabid Tea Party Republican friend. He comes in, and my other friend says to him, "How are you?" And he says, "Horseshit." He says, "That guy, how could they have elected that guy again? Who are they? What are they thinking? What are their values?" You know? And the odd thing is that I felt empathy with them. I could feel it in my heart. I could feel, oh, yes, upset. People, things he valued didn't get aren't getting manifested. So it felt wonderful. Well, not wonderful, but just alive. Felt alive and connected. So it enabled me to sit with them, have a good breakfast with them, feel their discouragement, and then chuckle to myself about our different stories, right? Their relation. My wife's elation was from a story she tells herself. My elation until I realized I had to have breakfast with them was from a story I tell myself, what my core values are, what I think is important in the world. And how can anybody have a different story? I mean, everyone knows that climate change is happening and that we're going to all perish if we don't care. How can people have a different story? How can they? But we all have different stories. We're human beings, we have different stories. So there they are with their story. And their story isn't being validated in this election. So they feel awful. My wife and my story, I got validated. Maybe there's some chance for the environment after all. Maybe poor people and people with mental illness won't be pushed aside after all. Our story is validated. Theirs is pushed aside. We can see that in our bare attention, in our bare awareness, an open heart. And we don't get caught so much. We don't need to get caught so much. This is our practice, our Zen practice. And it doesn't come from trying to figure stuff out or trying to be smart or following some system or meditation. It doesn't come from that. It comes from simplicity of paying attention to just this. Just this. And as we practice bare awareness, we can notice how our emotional habits solidify around the repetition of a given sequence. I knew what those guys, how those guys were going to be behaving when they got in that restaurant, because I'm not dumb. A repetition of a given sequence. I knew when I saw my wife's elation in bed in the morning what it meant. And this is all the human story, the human situation that we do together. The stronger the habit becomes, the less able we are to break out of these ruts. So before 5 years ago, the word tea party would have evoked in me kind of the Mad Hatter's tea party, Alice in Wonderland, fun stuff. My sisters inviting me to their tea party as long as I was quiet and not too boisterous. Fun stuff. Now what does the word tea party evoke in me? What does it evoke in me? The brain takes the easy path. It follows the same sequence over and over, leaving us prisoners. And that's just the brain. That's the way we survive in the world, by learning these repetitive, habitual responses. So we can see that. We can see that. Every time I hear tea party, ugh, completely different from 5 years ago, right? Ugh. And then the story starts going, right? It's interesting. We're kind of neat, aren't we? Kind of cool. But we create so many problems for ourselves and each other. So many problems. So, in this automatic, mindless sequence, the impulse to act flows right into action without any conscious consideration. And more often than not, we act out these emotional impulses without even considering, right? But I even consider it. We don't even know. We don't even know. Shooting arrows all around. One, two, three. Our quiver is gone. We got another quiver. Another quiver. Just shooting arrows. Just shooting arrows. Sometimes shooting them ourselves. Oh, you bad person. You shouldn't be like this. You're supposed to be a Zen teacher. Shooting them at others. You guys should be paying attention and doing more meditation. What am I doing teaching you over and over again when you don't come here and sit in the morning? Shooting arrows at you. Right? Shooting arrows. But with bare awareness, we see the arrows and we have the power not to act. It's different from impulse control. Impulse control is trying to using an arrow to try to not shoot any more arrows. It's different from impulse control. There's nothing to control. In intimacy, we're not trying to control. What's controlling? We're paying attention. We're opening our hearts. We're being aware. We're feeling our body. Not control. Bare awareness is an opportunity to access that gap between the emotion and the action. A quarter second gap, some physiologist said. Some brain scientist said a quarter second. Well, a quarter second is that sounds like no time. It's plenty of time. If you just watch it, if you just feel it, plenty of time. Plenty of time. So what is usually an automatic chain of reactions, chain of responses, comes into clear awareness on our window, on the window, and we have a choice to just accept at any point. And any point we accept, we break the chain. And it's not that not Tim accepts, I accept. It's more radical than that. It's quicker than that. If Tim accepts, that's just getting ready to do another arrow. It's acceptance before Tim accepts. Do you understand? Do you understand? So now we have freedom. Wow, we didn't think we ever could have this freedom. I never thought I could have this freedom when I was 21. I never thought it. We have freedom to react or not. To keep shooting arrows or to stop shooting arrows. More arrows will come. We'll be shooting more. But at any point, we can just stop it. Not repress it. Not suppress it. In our awareness, in our intimate reaching out to it, that's the gap, the wonderful gap, the spaciousness that really is the definition for all life, for all existence. The wonderful space in all Chinese Zen and Japanese Zen art. There's something there. You know, it's telling us something. It's reminding us something. That even in the most constricted emotion, there's space. There's space. If we breathe into it, if we let it just be, we don't mess with it. The Dalai Lama said, when we transform anger constructively, we are left with a clarity about what needs to be done and an intense energy to achieve our goals. So whenever our habit or reaction to emotionally charged situation emanates from a deeply ingrained habit, it narrows our freedom, right? It narrows our freedom. And we can notice that it's when it's about to capture us. I noticed there, standing by the bed, when it was about to capture me, I was about to be captured. But all I have to do is switch into my bare awareness. All I have to do. All you have to do is just switch into it. Moment after moment. And if you miss it for 8 moments, that's fine. Those are 8 arrows. The 9th moment, you pick it up. Then you miss it for another 8 arrows. Then the 18th moment, you pick it up again. Don't worry. You can do it. You can do it. We call this in Zen developing a good seat. Even though I can't sit in half lotus anymore, I still have a good seat. Maybe at some point I won't even be able to sit anymore in this way. I have to sit in a chair, still developing a good seat. A good seat means a seat that just allows whatever is coming in to come in and pass through. That's a good seat. And of course we try to have a straight posture because a straight posture helps us. If we're straight with our posture, we can be more straight with our emotion. But if our posture sags, we can have a good seat too. Still possible. And there are two things I think that are really important. Two main difficulties, I should say, in doing this bare awareness of emotion. Let's see, would you look at the, would you show me the clock? I can usually see the clock. Oh, okay. Thank you, Paul. Two main difficulties. And last week I talked, and I've talked a lot of time about the strength of the trance. That's one difficulty, the strength of the trance that we're in. We've got ourselves in some trance. I don't know how. It's how that we got ourselves in this trance. Yeah, so that we're always muttering. We're always... I haven't repeated this quote yet. I haven't repeated this quote in a year or two, but We're always in the trance that Bob Dylan talked about when he said, if my thought dreams would be seen, could be seen, they'd put my mind in a guillotine. We're always all in that trance, aren't we? That's the human situation, the human predicament. So that's the difficulty in this bare awareness that we're in this trance so much of the time. And of course, they would put our minds in a guillotine if we started just if each of you just started saying out loud what you were experiencing, you would. You'd all. They'd have to open up all the regional treatment centers again. And they'd put all of us in. We'd all be in, right? All of us. So, and the two main types of trance that we seem to get in are trance of unworthiness or trance of performance-based worthiness. Now, I've talked about this stuff before. Choose your trance. Unworthiness or performance-based worthiness. Of course, you don't get to choose your trance. Your trance comes out of your family, comes out of your childhood, comes out of your experience. You don't get to choose your trance. My sister, her trance was always just fundamental unworthiness, fundamentally not being okay. Fundamentally deficient. So excruciating that she'd do whatever she could to avoid it. She ended up doing some not cool things to avoid it. And of course, fundamental unworthiness. We numb ourselves with drugs or alcohol or promiscuous sex or whatever. We try to control and change ourselves through self-judgment, blaming others, just noticing how we're fundamentally no good. And then my trance from my childhood, which stayed around and still pops up on occasion, performance-based worthiness. Yeah. Some of you know about that one. You're worthy as long as you perform. We learned this from our dads. I don't know where the women learned it from, but we learned this from our dads. As we perform, we're worthy. But any time we start messing up, we're not worthy anymore. So, the practice of bare attention, of bare awareness, of just zazen, we begin as I've said before, the veils that keep us in this trance begin to part. But the trance is pretty embedded in us, So, it takes persistence and trust in the process. And it needs to include the recognition that sometimes we're going to be dejected in the process. We're going to think the process isn't working. This meditation isn't working. Bear awareness isn't working. All I'm doing is shooting arrows. I've been sitting here for 2 years, and all I'm doing is shooting arrows. But this brings to the other component, the other difficulty. The other difficulty is we don't have enough patience. It takes patience. Patience, what is patience? Well, my definition of patience is the capacity to feel at home. That's my own definition. Right? If we can just feel at home, then we'll have the patience. Our shakuhachi player here. Think of the patience that it must have taken you to play the shakuhachi those first few times. I don't know how long. My friend told me he couldn't even make a noise. He just had to breathe. He couldn't even make a noise for a long time. How long did it take you, Leo?
About
2 weeks. 2 weeks. Did you play every day for 2 weeks? He played every day. For 2 weeks, he made no noise. He was able to make no noise at all. Why didn't you give up?
I was determined. I thought maybe the flute that I bought was a piece of junk.
Shakuhachi is a great Zen instrument. Takes huge patience. How many years have you been playing now, Leo?
About 24, 25.
25 years, yeah. Uh-huh. Are you beginning to get it down?
Just starting.
Yeah.
I've got the rest of my life going.
Okay. We're very fortunate to have Leo here playing the Shakuhachi for us every Sunday. He doesn't get anything from it, but he doesn't need anything.
Right.
That's nice seat. Right. That's all we need is our seat. And our seat is wherever we are, you guys. That's our seat. That's our seat. Because we always have the capacity to be intimate with this. To be intimate with this. Always have that capacity. So cultivating patience. Cultivating patience, as I said last week, begins with setting an intention to meet the moments of our life. We have to come back and reset our intention to meet the moments of our life. And if we have trouble of doing that, as I said last week, then we have to ask ourselves what really matters. What really matters? What do we most value? What do we most value? And as a matter of fact, love is only found in wholehearted presence, in wholehearted awareness. Compassion comes out of wholehearted awareness. Creativity even only comes out of wholehearted awareness. So there's a real connection between this practice and our deepest values. Don't you think? So we have to ask ourselves when we get impatient, what really matters? And remember what we most value. And then reaffirm, as I was saying last week, our aspiration that this and all experience may serve awakening. It doesn't matter what the experience is. This experience may help us live wakefully, live openly, live fearlessly. This experience. And I want to finish by talking about a different type of emotion. And a type of emotion that can arise when the heart and the mind and body are open channels. A type of emotion that arises when we see, as my teacher Suzuki Roshi said, that the self is just a swinging door. A swinging door. Free and present and stable, but not reacting or responding to anything. Not in relationship to anything. So there's a joy. There's a deep joy that's not contingent. Not contingent. Tea party, Obama, Romney, pain in the legs, elation. It's not contingent. It's not based on what happened to us yesterday or what our mama did to us or what our papa did to us. Not based on anything. A different kind of emotion. A different kind of emotion. Sometimes things are going right, sometimes things are going wrong. This emotion, this fundamental joy, doesn't relate it to that. It doesn't know. It doesn't have a reason. It doesn't have a cause. It doesn't have a condition. And it comes as we learn to be present with things as they are. With things as they are. It comes naturally. But it takes patience. It takes patience. We call this the Buddha nature. Some people call it the Buddha nature. You can call it whatever you want. Who cares? My teacher called it your treasure. My teacher said, don't forget your treasure, Tim. So, when I had it, I've told this story a bazillion times. So, when I spent time meditating at the monastery in California, the Tassajara Monastery, you say monastery, but don't think of monastery because it's when men and women and there's quite a bit of sex going on in spite of the fact that we're sitting all the time. So monastery, you know, 21st century monasteries in the U.S. are a little different, right? But there's not too much time to have sex because you're so tired from sitting all the time and doing all this manual labor. Yeah. Well, you know. So I went back to San Francisco from the monastery. I grew up in California, as you guys know, some of you know. Went back to San Francisco, and my teacher was there. And in the monastery, I'd had some experiences of just this relationless joy that's not related to anything, that doesn't come from anywhere. Just come up, just bubble up. And then I got back into the city, and I wanted more of it, right? I wanted more of it. Remember, I'm a performance-based guy, right? More of it, more of it. Go to Japan. So I said to my teacher, go to Japan. And back then, all the hard sitters or all the determined sitters wanted to go to Japan because that was where the real Zen was, right? You don't hear that too much anymore. But then, go to Japan. Trying to find the place to go to Japan where I could tap into that, right? So my teacher just said to me one day, you have a great treasure within you. And he goes like this. And he says, don't let anybody take it from you. Somebody might try to take it from you. Well, I was taking it from myself. I was taking it from myself and just trying to be someone else rather than just coming back. So as we do this practice, gradually, but in its own time, there'll be a shift to more and more experiencing unrelated emotions that aren't related to some experience and that are quite joyful and that have nothing to do with our reactivity. And we can accomplish this just by avoiding another arrow. Just noticing this owl of this arrow and just avoiding another arrow. And if you add another arrow, just allowing that, just accepting that. Oh, here's a 132nd arrow. Wow, 132 arrows. I could feel them all. As opposed to shoot. If I feel them all, I don't shoot. Ahimsa. It's not something you cultivate. It's your nature. Your nature. You don't shoot. So Buddha said, our fear is great, but greater yet is the truth of our connectedness. Oh, simple. Simple, isn't it? Simple. And yet we forget it. And we have to be reminded. This teaching helps us remind ourselves that there is this interconnection and that we can access it at any moment, regardless of what's going on. So, our true nature, in a way, is always calling us home. We're always being called home to bare awareness, to leaving the trance behind, to parting the veils, Well, I think that's probably what I want to say. So, questions, comments, arrows?
When you talk about the bare awareness of motion itself, at times I think people also forget that there's also an awareness of the numbness that we create to emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've already created those arrows, once you've, you know, you keep going, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that, you shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
One of our ways of, you know, dealing with that is to push it all away, keeping it far away from yourself. And by saying, well, some people suddenly don't have that emotion anymore, and they want that emotion back, or, you know, but they don't have that, or they, like, oh shoot, I shouldn't do that. It's kind of the same principle, but coming from the opposite direction, and not allowing yourself to have that emotion or acceptance.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Suppression or repression. We want, you know, and a lot of, often in Zen meditation, we get into this suppression or repression. And we need to, and that's okay, and a little bit of suppression is okay. So we can just see the repression, just see the suppression. Well, it's, repression is unconscious, suppression is conscious. If we can just see it, we can see how actually, we've got so many arrows in us already that we're just suppressing for a while. That's fine. That's fine. We don't. So, just seeing that need to suppress frees us from the need to suppress. In a way, the total acceptance of it frees us from it. But we do need to do it sometimes. We do need to do it. Come back to your breathing. Come back to thinking about something that makes you feel good. That's all. We need that stuff in our meditation too. So we shouldn't be. We shouldn't turn bare awareness into a religion. Don't turn it into a religion. I just made it up. Buddha just made it up. Yeah.
This all reminds me of last weekend. I saw Laurie Anderson, like the walker.
Uh huh.
Her teacher, she said, teacher said to her, it is okay to feel sadness, it's not okay to be sad. And that, I think in some ways there's a correlation here, that, you know, whether it's sadness or anger, it's not that you need to judge yourself about the fact that you're having these feelings, but feeding them, indulging them,
That's right. Thank you. Other people? Yeah.
They say that we don't unlearn things that we learn. What if over years and years and years we keep learning more from somebody else?
So, I think you're saying, and qualify this if I'm not getting it right, that sometimes our conditioning is so strong. Sometimes we've gotten in such a deep trance from years and years and years of having bad experiences and not feeling okay, that it seems impossible that we could ever get out of that trance. Is that what you're saying? Well, this is not some kind of a perfection deal. So I still have all my stuff come up from my daddy and my mama. It's still all there, but it's just passing by the window. It's just passing by the window. And sometimes I react to it and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I catch it on the third arrow and just am with it and open. Sometimes it takes me 132 arrows. So our conditioning is always with us. We're conditioned beings. We learn how to protect ourselves in our families, in our relationships in school. And that armor is always there, but we don't have to let it weigh us down. We just don't have to let it weigh us down. By just seeing it and breathing into it, actually, it's very light. It's lightweight armor. It always seemed heavy, but it's very light. And it takes patience and practice. That's all I can say. That's all I can say. Yeah.
I think there's no way to unlearn. There's no way backwards. We can only go forward. It's more about learning how to live with it rather than unlearning it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm.